Howard, big year for you, of course, for lots of different reasons, but the big one, of course, is Sunday, isn't it, really? Rotherham United at Wembley. How are your feelings ahead of this one?
It is. It's a big few weeks, Paul, really, of course, with Brazil coming up. But, yeah, the big one is on Sunday. And, of course, you know, we're going down to Wembley. We're enjoying the build-up. We're going to enjoy the build-up on the day as well. But it's a sort of game where, really, it all depends on the result. And the pain of losing the playoff final is pretty acute. I know that from 4 years ago when we lost to Dagenham. And, of course, if you win, I imagine, having not experienced it yet, but if you win, I imagine it's one of the greatest feelings and has to be the greatest way to get promoted. And, of course, when we do win, then it'll send me off to Brazil in a really good mood.
And you support Rotherham in the proper way. Despite your profile and what you potentially could do with your status, i.e. getting tickets here and tickets there, you do it the proper way. You were spotted in the ticket office before the Preston game with everybody else queuing for tickets. You don't abuse your position, do you? You do follow Rotherham United as any other fan would.
Yeah, I mean, one of the highlights of the season for me, irrespective of anything else that I do, is being able to go down and watch Rotherham United home or away, really, as a football fan, without the pressure of going to a game to officiate or any other sort of away. So I do enjoy that aspect of it. The club made me really proud a few years ago. They made me the honorary ambassador of the football club, and my name is listed in the matchday programme in that capacity, and I'm really proud of that. It's something that I do treasure. But still, I've got a family who go to the matches. Every home game, we've got season tickets, which I buy every year. My lad Jack and my daughter Holly go with my wife Kay, and I like to sit with them, to be honest. And yeah, I suppose I could sit elsewhere in the stadium, but I'd rather sit with the fans. We sit right behind Steve Evans. We enjoy the sort of entertainment that he provides during the game as well, and we really do get a lot of pleasure from watching the Millers. And of course, this season it's just been magnificent.
But how does the refereeing affect you watching them? You buy a season ticket. I'm guessing it doesn't get used a great deal, does it, yours?
Yeah, well, I don't actually purchase one because it really wouldn't be value for money. The club are very good to me. They reserve a seat alongside the three season tickets. And if I don't have a game on a Saturday, for example, if I have a Sunday game, then I can let the club know that I want that ticket and I purchase that ticket. And we can all sit together. So we have a little arrangement in that respect, which is excellent. The Rotherham United have been fantastic to me. But of course, a lot of the time with the job that I do, I'm not able to go to the game in person. I have to get back to the dressing room after my game in the Premier League, get the phone out, have a look at the text messages from my friends who've been at the game, or turn the TV on later and see the scores coming in and hopefully see that we've won the match.
It's one of the first things you do, isn't it?
It is.
For the Millers result.
It is, and I mean, this season has been a good one in that respect. You know, there's been many other seasons that haven't been so good, but I cast my mind back to a game I did years ago when we were promoted under Ronnie Moore to what is now the Championship, and Alan Lee scored a goal against Brentford.
Really, who could forget that?
Exactly, right at the end of the game, and I couldn't be there. I was refereeing Blackpool against Barnet in League Two. What is League Two now? And you know, the elation I felt when I saw the scoreline and realised we'd been promoted. Of course, it wasn't quite the same as being there, but still, you know, a fantastic feeling as a Rotherham United supporter. Even more special this weekend if we can do it at Wembley, and I'm there. I'll be absolutely over the moon.
How good is this current team as you see it?
It just seems to get better and better, you know. I mean, they've got a fantastic work ethic. You look at the goals they've scored late in games, the number of times they've gone behind in games. But I think we've got to a stage now where, you know, if we do concede, we don't seem to panic. You know, we think, you know, you've got a lot of character in this team. You know, we can really boss games. We've got a fantastic midfield. We really have. We've got good competition in those places as well. And we're pretty solid all the way through the spine of the team. And, you know, you look back at the great teams that I've watched over the years, you know, going right back to the 1981 team with Ronnie Moore and Tony Towner, and then the team that got us promoted that I've talked about with Alan Lee scoring back, you know, the early part of the 2000s. This one's right up there, in my opinion. It really is. And I'll be honest, I didn't really expect it. I thought we might hold our own in this division. But, you know, players who we brought in, like Kieran Aegaard, who, you know, we didn't know how Kieran would do, but he's just absolutely excelled this season. And of course, you've got quality as well in players like Lee Frecklington. Absolutely quality footballer, in my opinion. Strong at the back with Craig Morgan and Kari Arnesen. The goalkeeper's done well. And up front, Alex Revel just gives you absolutely everything he's got.
He embodies everything that you want to see from a footballer, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Know, the way he works, the way he chases everything in the Preston game, in stoppage time, he's chasing around the pitch like his life depended on it. He's chipped in with a lot of goals this season, more than last. in the league below.
Double figures, absolutely, and some really quality goals as well. And, you know, important goals like the one against Leyton Orient in the last minute, and the one, of course, at Preston in the playoffs. So, yeah, he does embody everything that a good team should be about. His work ethic is fantastic. I do know him personally. Alex is a great guy, somebody who spends a lot of time in the community as well. But then again, of course, you've got some great service as well from Ben Pringle's left foot. I mean, absolute quality. You know, just talking about the team does excite me, and it excites all of us. And the town as well has responded. I drove through Rotherham the other day, and we used to see the usual Sheffield Wednesday and Sheffield United shirts and the Premiership shirts, but I've never seen so many Rotherham United shirts as well. The timing's been good, you know, coming back into Rotherham with the New York Stadium, of course. I had a friend over the other day from Northern Ireland, and he'd never been to Rotherham before, and I gave him a tour of the town, and he was so impressed by the football stadium. I think people are quite amazed by what's happened down there. And it's triggered a real interest in the football club, and combined with the increased attendances and the performances on the field of play, it means that we're in a good phase at the moment for the football club.
It's a real beacon for the town, isn't it, the stadium? You can't miss it. I mean, it's beautiful, really, but it seems like it is a real shining light in the town of Rotherham. Put them on the map.
It is. And you know something, Paul, it would have been so easy to put the stadium out, you know, somewhere near the M18 or somewhere, or near the M1 on an industrial estate or something. But, you know, the town needed a boost, and it's certainly done that. And I think, you know, we all have to pay a big thank you to Tony Stewart. We've said it before, and I think he deserves to say it again. You know, we're so grateful for his foresight and the investment that he's made to make this possible. You know, he came into the football club at a time when we were really, you know, in dire straits, for sure. You know, we feared the football club might not survive. I can remember driving to a training session for Premier League referees, and it came on Radio 5 that Rotherham United had gone back into administration. I thought, my goodness, this could be the death knell. This really could be the final straw. And, you know, we needed somebody to come in and have the confidence to take the club on and put the money where the mouth was. And Tony's done that. And, you know, he had to take some difficult decisions, some difficult steps to take the club to Don Valley. It wasn't ideal. It served a purpose, and we should be grateful for what Don Valley did for us, to give us a home and a springboard to come back into the town with Tony's backing, and we can see the fruits of his hard work coming through now.
They are on a crest of a wave at the moment. I do wonder when it will all end. Sooner or later it has to, but I just wonder how long and how far they can go actually as a club before that day comes. Could they potentially, in years to come, challenge for Premier League?
I've got a smile on my face thinking about it. I suppose why not? You're right. You know, football clubs have peaks and troughs, and we know that all of the local football clubs experience the same. You know, you look at Chesterfield, two promotions and a relegation in three seasons, and in some respects that's part of the life of a football supporter, in that you know that's going to happen, and then when you do get a high, you know, you do really savour them, because you know the pain of those low moments. You're right. I guess the bubble will burst at some point, but I think there's some stability there now. We've got the infrastructure in place at the football club. We've got the means to earn income away from just one day a fortnight. We've got the backing of a really decent chairman and a good board. I suppose it's about trying to encourage players to come to Rotherham United in whatever division we're in to continue to strengthen. I'm sure Tony and Steve Evans will be keen on doing that. The people of Rotherham supporting the club, even if the results aren't as good as they have been this season. And who knows? You know, you look at some of the clubs who have made it through to the Premier League in the past. You know, you look at your Wigan Athletics. You know, we've often competed against teams like Burnley over the years.
Blackpool, of course, went up one year.
Blackpool went up, of course, and
Barnsley even further back.
Absolutely. So it can happen to teams of a similar size as Rotherham United. I know there is potential to expand the stadium to a bigger stadium than what it is now. But one of the delights about the stadium is that it's the right size for us at the moment. You know, I've refereed in grounds where, you know, there's a huge stadium and not many people, and that's not great for the atmosphere there as well. So it's been done quite carefully. The planning's been done in the correct way, and of course we can dream, but I think step by step, let's get Sunday out of the way, see how we get on. And you know, even if we don't win on Sunday, Paul, then we can look back on an amazing achievement of getting into the playoff final. To beat a team like Preston over two legs was a fantastic achievement, for which we were all very proud, and we can look back on a really wonderful season. 14 away wins, I mean, I can't remember a season like that ever. Our stats are right up there with the best in the Football League of all the 72 clubs in terms of goals scored, numbers of away wins, and I suppose the silver lining would be that league League One will be quite special next year anyway, in terms of Chesterfield, Barnsley, Doncaster, Sheffield United, of course, and some other fairly local teams like Scunthorpe will be there. That, I'm just trying to make myself feel better in case we don't do it on Sunday, but of course all the Rotherham United fans want us to get over the finish line and celebrate on Sunday night with safe in the knowledge that we're going to see Championship football down at New York Stadium next season.
Will you watch it as a fan? I know when I go and watch games just as a fan, I hear myself commentating in my own head. Do you analyse what the referee's doing more than perhaps anybody else would?
What tends to happen when I'm at a game is that people will look at me every time there's a bit of a contentious decision. And I've learned that I have to be careful how I react, because I do know that sometimes my emotions can get away with me and people will put on Twitter that even Howard Webb's shaking his head at that decision.
Have you done that before?
Yeah. So I have to be a little bit careful. But I guess the only two teams I tend to watch as a fan are England and Rotherham United. And I will watch it absolutely as a football fan. And if I feel that Leighton Orient are hanging on in the last minute and a time wasting, then I'll be up shouting for David Coote, the referee, to get all of the time wasters. For sure, I'll be whistling for the full-time whistle if we're winning, and I'll definitely be sporting it as a fan, biting my nails. I'm nervous thinking about it now. It'd be nice if nobody's speaking about the referee. We've got a good referee on Sunday.
Is he all right, David?
Yeah, he is. Yeah. He's somebody who's certainly being looked at in terms of potential for the Premier League. He's had a good season. And, they don't make these appointments lightly. They make them on the basis of who's had a good season, who they see as being a safe pair of hands for these really important games. I've refereed playoff finals myself before. I did the 2003 League One playoff final at Cardiff between Cardiff City and QPR. And I also did the Championship playoff final in 2012 between West Ham and Blackpool. And Wembley, that one. And you are aware of the importance of those games because a season's work hangs on them. And, you realise that, if you just lose your focus for a moment as a ref, or don't concentrate, or make a knee-jerk call without giving it the thought it needs on a difficult decision, then you can damage the entire season's work. So, of course, you hope that the game's passed without you being talked about as the match official, but also you realise that you might need to make a big and important call at some point during the 90 minutes or 120 minutes. But David's a good referee, and it's a sensible and safe appointment.
And we have another local referee in action on Monday for the League Two final. Michael Naylor, I think, from Sheffield.
Yeah, Michael's had a good season again. He's somebody who's been performing at the top of the Football League list for quite some time. And again, he's somebody who is being looked at for Premier League positions. I think this part of the world seems to deliver quite a lot of good referees. And whether it's because, people see the example of previous guys, going right back to people like Keith Hackett. We've had Uriah Rennie, of course, from this part of the world. We've got two Premier League referees from South Yorkshire, myself and Craig Pawson from Sheffield, who's making a decent name for himself. And of course, like I said, Michael Naylor is doing well on the Football League as well. So, yeah, for some reason, we seem to do well from Sheffield and South Yorkshire in terms of producing decent referees.
How's your season been?
It's been okay. My international season has gone superbly well. I've had some amazing games, really. I was in charge of a World Cup playoff game between Portugal and Sweden, which was an absolute pleasure to be involved in, really. Again, we talked about importance of the playoffs in the Football League. When you're talking about World Cup playoff games, then you realise an Italian nation's hopes are hanging on those two games over two legs. And I was lucky enough to get a second leg game in the Friends Arena in Stockholm. It was billed as the battle between Ibrahimovic and Ronaldo, and six goals were scored over the two legs, and all six came from those two players, and it was a pleasure to be involved in a really intense second leg, which Portugal came through on, but luckily our performance was seen as a good one. And then some great games in the Champions League, including a quarter-final, Atletico Madrid against Barcelona, second leg, and then a first leg semi-final between Real Madrid and Bayern Munich. So these games are unbelievably exciting to be involved in, even for the match official. You've got a great seat in the house when you're watching these games and when you're a part of them as the referee. Domestically, it's gone okay. When you're involved in 30 games, then maintaining the very high standard is what you aim to do. But obviously, that's always a challenge. And I've had some big games and some good games as well. But there's always time to reflect on your performance and see if you can do better. The next year.
You've had some flat though, haven't you? How do you deal with that?
Yeah, I mean, you do, but you realise that that's part and parcel of what you do. If you're in the sporting arena, no matter who you are, whether you're a player or an official, and I suppose the better known you become, the higher up the ladder you go, then I suppose it does attract more criticism sometimes, and you learn to live with that. You learn to reflect upon your own performance and analyse it with people whose opinions you trust, and you continually try to develop and improve as much as you can.
Do you see the stuff like Howard Webb in a Man United shirt that gets posted on Twitter?
It's amazing. Sometimes people will tell you what's being said. For example, somebody will text me on my phone and say, "Can't believe what they're saying about you on Radio 5," or "Have you seen what's written in today's newspaper?" And I really don't want to know. I'd rather not look because I'm realistic enough to know if I look on the internet, then there'll be a whole raft of things on there about me, about which I'd rather probably not see.
Yeah.
So, but I would say that when I meet people in person, they're very positive and they always. They always have a real interest in the job that we do, and by and large people are pretty appreciative of the job that the officials do, and they accept it's a difficult job as well, and they know that there has to be a group of officials that are prepared to do the games at that level, and they want the officials to be good, and by and large the response we get is positive.
You're off to another World Cup, you're going to Brazil, but tell us about the preparations. We've just been chatting before we started about some of the things you've been doing. What kind of things do you have to go through before going to a hot country like that?
Yeah, I mean, we've all been part of a process whereby a large group of referees were selected for a provisional shortlist, right up to something like 80 people, 80 referees from around the world, and that's been reduced right down to 25 who are going to take charge of games, and that selection has been made on performances on international and domestic football, our own personal performance at seminars that have taken place, we have video testing, we have physical tests as well, and we have examinations on the laws of the game, and all these things are taken into account together with your level of experience as well, and then a selection is made, and of course when you get that final indication you're going to be involved, it's a great feeling. It really is to know that you're going to go to a wonderful festival of football in a great place like Brazil. It's pretty special. Of course, being in Brazil, it throws up some different challenges to other tournaments that I've been involved in Europe and also in South Africa in 2010, and of course one of those challenges is the heat and humidity that we'll face in parts of Brazil should we be appointed there. At the moment, we don't know what games we're going to receive. We fly down at the very start of June. Our first appointments will be made after a few days, and that's when we'll know which game we're doing first off. Just to try to combat the effects of the heat and humidity, I've been doing some work at Sheffield Hallam University. They have an environmental chamber in which they can change the climatic conditions. So I've been doing all my training for the last 2 weeks in their chamber at about 40 degrees or 35 degrees, 85% humidity, on a treadmill, doing repeated sprint work. And I've got to say, Paul, it's like torture. It really is so difficult.
Sounds it.
Burning 1,500 calories. I'm in there for an hour and a half. It's like sitting in your sauna, in your local gym or spa. And normally you do 10 minutes and think that's enough, I'm back in the pool. I have to stay there for an hour and a half. And every 10 minutes, they make me jump on a treadmill and do 5 minutes work and before coming back off again. And I'm burning something like 1,500 calories. I'm losing 3 or 4 litres of sweat, which equates to about 4 kilos of weight. So it's tough, but I'm hoping it's worth it. I mean, I did the altitude training before South Africa in 2010 at the same chamber in Sheffield Hallam University, and who knows if it made a difference, but we did the training and I got all the way to the final in South Africa. So I think preparation is important, and if you can give yourself a small advantage, if it makes my life easier, if I get appointed to a game in Manaus in the north, or Fortaleza or Recife right in the north of Brazil, I know from my experiences last year in the Confederations Cup when I refereed a couple of games in Fortaleza that the conditions are really tough. You're sweating just doing your pitch inspection, you're trying to do high intensity runs from one penalty area to the other to make important decisions late in the game, and it's difficult because it's so hot and humid. And if I can offset those effects to enable me to make a big decision correctly from the right place late in the game, then it's going to have been worthwhile suffering the pain here in Sheffield.
You did the final, as you say, in South Africa. That has to be the best moment of your career as a referee, I'm assuming.
Undoubtedly. There's only been 19 referees taken charge of a World Cup final, and to be selected, you need an awful lot of luck and good fortune. Of course you do, but you work hard to put yourself in a position where you can take advantage of good fortune, and a really special honour to have been appointed to that game.
Can you do it again then, seeing as you've done one already? How does it work?
There's nothing written. There's nothing written, so you can't. I mean, it's a bit like the FA Cup final. There's nothing written, so you can't do two FA Cup finals, but nobody ever has. It's just more or less a custom and practice now that you'll get one shot at it. And the same, really, for the World Cup final. It would take an amazing sequence of events and circumstance for me to be appointed to the World Cup final in terms of the teams which qualify and the performance of other referees. We're going down there with 24 other really decent officials, and of those guys, they'll pretty much all be capable of doing the World Cup final, and to give it to one person, on back-to-back finals, it hasn't happened before. Nobody's ever done the World Cup final twice, and I don't for a minute expect that will change for me. Somebody else will be given the opportunity. Just getting there is quite unique. There's not in modern times been a situation where the existing World Cup final referee has gone back to a World Cup finals.
Is that right?
Yeah. So I was quite proud that I was selected again. Out of the 29 referees that went to South Africa in 2010, only four are going back to this World Cup in Brazil. So the other guys have either retired or have been overtaken by somebody from within their own country in terms of who FIFA feel are the best candidates. And of all the teams that are down there, the teams of referees and assistants, mine is the only team that's going back. So me and my two assistants, Darren Cam, Mike Malarkey, who I work with all the time, we're the only trio that's going back down as well. So again, we feel quite proud that we've maintained our standards as a team, all three of us, and been reselected.
How many games do you think you'll do? Do you even know that?
You don't. You're only guaranteed one game, and if that game goes well, you're in the frame for a second game. If there should be a problem in that game, then that might be your only game. So the old cliche really does come into play of taking every game one at a time, because if you don't focus on that first game you're pointed to and you look ahead thinking what else is going to come, then you won't get another chance if you don't do well on your first game. So you have to nail your first game, make sure that you do it in the right way. It might be the first game doesn't come until you've been down in Brazil for 3 weeks, and again that takes some coping with as well, because you want to get things underway, you want to get your first game under your belt, but you need to make sure you don't get too anxious about that and that you stay relaxed, and that when the game comes you do things in the normal way, the way that's got you to the finals in the first place. You do a good job and then you can look forward hopefully to a second game. And in South Africa I refereed four games. I did a game, two games in the group stage. I did a round of 16 game between Brazil and Chile, and then I was appointed to the final, match number 64 between the Netherlands and Spain. So who knows what will happen in Brazil. We'll wait for that first appointment eagerly, but again we'll stay relaxed and we've got lots of experiences. This is my ninth tournament in world football, including under 21s, under 20 World Cup, under 17 World Cup. I've been to a couple of European Championships, the World Cup before, the Confederations Cup twice, so vastly experienced in terms of coping with the demands of tournament football, not just on the pitch but off the pitch as well. And they are great things to be involved in. They really are amazing experiences. 6 weeks in Brazil, potentially living, breathing, eating football for somebody who loves the game like I do, like I know you do. They really are fantastic things to be involved in.
How much longer will you do this job for?
I don't know. I mean, whilst ever I'm eager to do well, I get the same desire in the tunnel of that excitement, that those butterflies in the tummy. I really do love the job pretty much all of the time. There's some lows, I'll be honest. Sometimes when a game goes badly, or you've made a mistake, or you've let yourself down with a decision, it's going to be painful for a few days. And the lows are pretty low, but the highs are high when the game goes well, and there's more highs than lows. And the number of times I'll drive home from a game feeling pretty elated about the way it's gone. Sometimes feeling relieved as well when a really big game goes well, and a strong emotion is one of relief, because you know that people aren't talking about you. You're satisfied with your own performance. But whilst ever I get those same emotions, I'll continue doing what I'm doing. I'm a lucky guy in that I get paid to do something that I love.
Will you ever go back to the police?
Well, I still do 10 hours a week with South Yorkshire Police. I had a 5-year career break between 2008 and 2013. That's the maximum time you can do it for. And then last year in 2013, I had to make an assessment of what was the best thing I could do in terms of my police career, which obviously was my previous occupation, and the refereeing was a hobby. The refereeing took over as a full-time job, and that's why I took the career break. And South Yorkshire Police have been exceptional in the way they've treated me. My superintendent said, if you want to come back and do some part-time work, engaging kids, using some of the contacts that you've got in sport, then that would he felt that would be a useful relationship to have. And for the last 12, 13, 14 months I've been working with South Yorkshire Police on very much on a part-time basis, but using some of my contacts in football to engage kids all across South Yorkshire. We have quite a few football schemes running now under the banner of Sport FX South Yorkshire. We're using the combination of a partnership, if you like, with Sheffield and Hallamshire County FA, South Yorkshire Police and various schools who allow us to use their facilities. Really just to get kids away from potential antisocial behaviour, get them playing football in a safe environment, quite an unstructured environment, but one that they're going to really get some benefit from. Mm. And we engage in anything up to 1,000 children a week now on that initiative. It's something I'm quite proud of.
You're here to that. What about referees? I mean, we always hear about there's a shortage of referees coming through. Has that changed? Have we seen an improvement of youngsters getting involved in the refereeing side or not?
Certainly more than when I started. I started back in 1989 and I was pretty much a failed footballer. I mean, when I was eight, I had no ambition to be a referee. Not many kids at eight do have that ambition. I had an ambition of being a World Cup winning captain. I suppose being English makes that ambition quite difficult to achieve, but I'm hoping that Steven Gerrard can experience it this summer. But yeah, you know, I wasn't as good as I thought I would be. And My dad came up to me when I was about 17 and said, "Howard, you're not a very good footballer. Have you thought about doing a bit of refereeing?" Because he'd done some himself, and I said to him, "I'm not really interested, Dad, because when I think about, you know, football referees in my mind's eye, I think about bald old men, which is something I've probably become."
Well, you perfected some of it.
Exactly, exactly. I'm getting older by the minute, but I decided when I was quite young to give it a go. I was only 18 when I started back in 1989, and there weren't many young referees around. Now we have more. We're still short of the numbers that we need, but it does attract more younger people, I think, than it did before. We still need to encourage people to get involved, but we have more younger people than before. I think that's because people can see the potential career path in officiating. They see that, you know, it's quite feasible to make it to a decent level, to the Conference or to the Football League, Premier League, or even onto the FIFA international list. I hope that what we did in 2010 at the World Cup inspired some people as well. You know, a young lad from Rotherham can make it all the way through to the World Cup final, you know, in another capacity rather than just playing or coaching or managing. I would encourage anybody to give it a go, really. It's a great way to, you know, to maintain your physical fitness, to improve your physical fitness. You know, it's a good way to develop as an individual as well. And for young people, you know, it's a great way to find stuff out about yourself and also to learn life skills that then you can maybe take with you into a job interview or onto a CV for a potential employer. And, you know, we would welcome as many young people as possible, girls and boys, into refereeing.
It's been a pleasure to talk to you. I'm sorry I've kept you for so long, but it's rare that we get the chance to sit down like that. Enjoy Sunday. Good luck at the World Cup.
Thanks, Paul. Yeah, looking forward to it. And of course, all I would like to say for Sunday is up the Millers.